If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
One of the reasons Donald Trump has become so popular with many Americans lies in his gut-level pro-Americanism. Trump doesn't make blue-collar Americans feel bad about themselves. He tells them they're not racist, they're not sexists. Trump doesn't make those who earn feel rotten. He tells them he's earned too, and he's proud of it. Most of all, though, Trump does not tear down law enforcement. That last fact was on full display on Tuesday when the president-elect called the family of San Antonio police officer Benjamin Marconi, who was murdered on Sunday during a traffic stop. Police Chief William McManus said the uniform was the target in the murder. Marconi's son Dane got on Facebook and posted, quote, "Just got off the phone with future President Trump. He sends his condolences to our family." Trump's team has said nothing about the call thus far. This isn't the first such call for Trump post-election. Shortly after the election, Trump called the widow of murdered New York Police Department Sergeant Paul Tuozzolo to offer condolences. He said, "I'm very sorry I cannot be here with you today. My thoughts and prayers are with you and your family during this difficult time." This is classy stuff. It's also necessary. President Obama sometimes called the families of slain cops. He routinely called the families of black people shot by cops under disputed circumstances at best. When he spoke at the funeral service for targeted and murdered Dallas police officers, he used the dais to rip police across the country as suffering from implicit bias and racism. Americans rightly got the impression Obama didn't care nearly as much about targeted officers as he did about his misguided crusade to slander officers as the source of anti-black racism. That is certainly not the message from Trump. Trump isn't standing by bad police officers, of course, but he is making it clear that he stands by police officers across the country and that he takes their lives seriously. That is a hell of a change from the current occupants of the Oval Office. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show. All righty, so much to get to here today, but we begin by saying hello to our sponsors at Helix Sleep. So, Helix Sleep, this is a great company, and the way that this works is you go to their website, helixsleep.com/Ben, use the slash Ben, you get $50 off your first order, helixsleep.com. And the way that they do this is they ask you questions about your body type, about your weight, about your height. They ask questions about whether you like a soft mattress or a hard mattress. Do you like it to be warm or do you like it to be breathable? And then they send you the mattress in the mail. They send it to you in the mail, and you can try it out for 100 nights for free. And if you don't like it, you can just send it right back. A customized mattress can cost you thousands and thousands of dollars, but Helix mattress, they cost you like a fraction of that. In many cases, under $1,000. Shipping is 100% free. It comes in a box, and the way that it works is you unpack the box, and it automatically inflates. It's really cool. It is super comfortable. It is so comfortable that we actually just got rid of a mattress that we had, very expensive mattress that we had. We actually put it in the other room, and we got a new bed frame because we liked our Helix mattress so much. We actually just had that bed frame delivered yesterday. That's how much we like the Helix mattress. It's helixsleep.com/Ben, helixsleep.com/Ben, and you get $50 off your first order. Again, it's truly customized, and you can even customize it if there are two people on the mattress. You can customize it so that each side is different, which is great. And if you're Bill Clinton, you can make sure that one side is filled with spikes so that Hillary never sleeps in the same bed, I guess. But in any case, helixsleep.com/Ben, that's the place to go to get this mattress, and it is terrific. Alrighty, so lots to get to today. We begin with the Democrats. So, you know, the fact is that everybody's paying attention to the Trump transition, and we'll get to that in a little while. There's been some more good Trump, bad Trump with regard to the picks that he's making for his cabinet. Dr. Ben Carson has been picked, which is a but then also he just picked a woman named Betsy DeVos for the Secretary of Education, which is a great pick. He's been stomping all over the grave of Kelly Ayotte, which is also a kind of but he's made, apparently, Nikki Haley the UN ambassador, which is a great pick. So we'll talk about all of those and what they mean and why this is happening. But first, we need to talk about the Democrats, because the Democrats are totally falling apart. They are utterly falling apart. Elijah Cummings is a Democrat. I believe that Elijah Cummings is from, is he from Alabama? Maryland. My bad. So Elijah Cummings is from Maryland, and he is basically, the Democrats are struggling for identity. They're struggling for identity, and that means that they have to fall back on the tried and true strategies. Those strategies include, of course, saying that black people are going to be victimized by white Republicans and saying that gay people will be victimized by Trump. They have to play identity politics. There's been a lot of talk in the aftermath of Trump winning about Democrats dumping identity politics at the door. Stop alienating white folks by claiming they're all racist. Stop alienating men by claiming they're all sexist. Stop alienating rich people by saying that they're all greedy. You know, actually start pitching your policies. Elijah Cummings, however, he says, no, we can't do that. There's no way.
I think we need to... No, I don't necessarily agree. I think we need to deal with economics. I think economics is very important. But I think that we need to still pay attention to so many people who have been left out of the system in one way or another. Just like what I just talked about, voting rights of certain segments of our population. I think we can do both. But we've got to concentrate on economics, because a lot of people are suffering, and African Americans and Hispanics are suffering probably more than other parts of our communities. And so that would be my answer there.
Okay, so he says that we need to double down on the identity politics. Of course he thinks they need to double down on the identity politics. The Democrats have created this new Obama coalition that is largely based on pressing forward identity politics. And that, of course, has driven a sort of quasi-identity politics from the right that is not my favorite thing. But Cummings is wrong, obviously. The way the Democrats, if they actually wanted to win, could win is by abandoning those identity politics. Or maybe they're so far down that road, there's no way to do it. Maybe they're afraid that if they abandon identity politics, maybe more black people will vote Republican because they won't feel pressured to vote Democrat because those Republicans are evil racists. So they keep doubling down on this. One of the ways they're doubling down on this is the push for Keith Ellison, Muslim congressperson from Minnesota. The reason I say Muslim congressperson is because there are only two Muslims in the United States Congress. I believe the other one's Andre Carson. And Ellison, of course, was the first, I think, Muslim congressperson in the Congress. And so he's gotten major play politically over that. He's being talked about very seriously for head of the Democratic National Committee. There's a problem there, and that is that Keith Ellison is a radical, radical anti-Semite. I mean, he's radically anti-Israel. He's associated with the Nation of Islam. And the Democrats don't know what to do. They're endorsing Ellison because they're doubling down on the identity politics. So here's Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts and the supposed God queen of the hardcore left, talking about why Keith Ellison would be a terrific choice.
I talked with Congressman Ellison. I really, really like Keith, and I think he's terrific, and I think he would make a terrific DNC chair. I just recently heard that Howard Dean, I mean, literally just a few minutes ago, I heard that Howard Dean may be in this. I'm in. Talk to him. Fine. I'd like to hear what his vision is. But I want lots of Democrats in, engaged, and ready to go.
God, she is so irritating, and she's also wrong on this. I know she was Professor Warren when I was at Harvard Law School. She was irritating then. She's become twice as irritating now with her faux sincerity. But just a little bit of background about Keith Ellison. So the person she just praised is a terrific choice for the DNC. This is tape of Keith Ellison in 2007 when he was asked about 9/11. This is sort of bootlegged tape.
You would never have all this discrimination against religious minorities, but for 9/11. I mean, you had it, but you didn't have it to the degree that we have it now. 9/11 is this juggernaut event in American history, and it allows, I mean, it's almost like, you know, the Reichstag fire kind of reminds me of that. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Who benefited from 9/11? Who benefited from 9/11? Who benefited from 9/11?
Well, I mean, you know, you and I both know.
Yeah, Bush.
But the thing is that, you know, after the Reichstag was burned, they blamed the communists for it, and it put the leader of that country in a position where he could basically have authority to do whatever he wanted.
Okay, so he compared the 9/11, if you missed it, to the Reichstag fire, which was a faked fire by the Nazis in order to allow Hitler to consolidate his power. So he's actually, I mean, this is a far-left radical Islamist lie that has been pushed by people from those contingents. And there's Keith Ellison, by the way. You hear the guy in the audience saying the Jews benefited from 9/11, and Ellison basically going, yeah, maybe. I mean, this is the guy they're talking about for head of the DNC, but that's not the only thing that we know about Keith Ellison. Joel Mowbray, my friend who writes over at the Daily Caller, he wrote, the man poised to head the Democratic Party was a spokesman for the Nation of Islam well into his 30s. The Nation of Islam is a radically anti-Semitic group led by Louis Farrakhan. He publicly spewed anti-Semitism and later in life as a congressional candidate knowingly accepted $50,000 in campaign contributions given and raised by Islamic radicals who openly supported Islamic terrorism and were leaders of front groups for Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood. By the way, the period during which Ellison defended the Nation of Islam, the spokespeople were openly Jew-hating. In 1995, that guy you saw on tape, Keith Ellison, he led a rally featuring a guy named Khalid Abdul Muhammad, who was a Nation of Islam member. Muhammad got up and said, quote, if words were swords, the chests of Jews, gays, and whites would be pierced. Ellison also defended Louis Farrakhan as, quote, not a racist, not an anti-Semite. Farrakhan has called Jews devils. Okay, and that's not where it stops, by the way. Here is tape of Representative Ellison saying that he voted against funding for Iron Dome. This is in the middle of a war in which Israel is being hit by rockets. He voted against funding Israel's capacity to defend itself.
The point is, but for John Kerry to run around trying to achieve one, I think is exactly
what he should
be
doing. Can I ask you on that point? You always supported Iron Dome, which is the missile system, but you just voted against more money for it. Why?
Because a ceasefire is what we should prioritize now. A ceasefire protects civilians on both sides. It doesn't just say we're only concerned about people on one side. I've been to Sderot. I have stood with those people talking about those rockets and that indiscriminate rocket fire. And I've also been to Gaza three times since 2009. And those people are absolutely devastated. We need a peace ceasefire now.
Okay, so the way that he wants a ceasefire is by removing Israel's protection from indiscriminate rocket attack. That's Keith Ellison, the guy they're talking about for head of the DNC. Just a couple of months ago, he wrote in the Washington Post, quote, as I have talked with ordinary Gazans, I have not encountered anyone representing Hamas. The Gaza Strip is literally run by the terrorist group Hamas. Ellison openly associates with the campaign to end the Israeli occupation, which is a virulently anti-Israel interest group that labels Democrats like Chuck Schumer, he's a Democrat, right, an Israel firster. Democrats, by the way, will not talk about this. He won't talk about this. He's been avoiding interviews for literally weeks now. Josh Krashauer at National Journal, he tweeted this morning, Dems really don't want to talk about Ellison's record on Israel. No comments, said one Schumer ally. Many stories avoiding elephant in the room. Right? Meanwhile, the Anti-Defamation League, which has done yeoman's work on criticizing the alt-right, they have nothing to say about Keith Ellison and the fact that the leader of the DNC may be this guy who is openly associated with anti-Semites and, in fact, has engaged in openly anti-Semitic behavior. Here was the statement from Jonathan Greenblatt. Greenblatt, by the way, I've met him, nice guy, but Jonathan Greenblatt was an Obama staffer, okay? And here's the statement from the ADL, quote, we spoke with the leadership in the Jewish community in Minnesota who confirmed what ADL and other national organizations have seen, that Keith Ellison is a man of good character. We have seen him through his work in Congress as an important ally in the fight against anti-Semitism and for civil rights. Nonsense, nonsense, nonsense. He has been on the record in support of Israel. Ha 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 ha. And supports a two-state solution. However, the congressman has also made statements and taken positions, especially regarding the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and on the JCPOA, that would be the Iranian agreement, on which we strongly differ and that concern us. We hope that candidates for this post will make clear where they stand on these issues and that the Democratic National Committee will make a choice that affirms the long-standing bipartisan consensus to a strong U.S.-Israel relationship. In addition, we want to make clear to those who disagree with Congressman Ellison that in doing so, there is no room for innuendo or slander because of his race or faith. Okay, it's not about his race or faith. It has everything to do with his views and the views that he has openly espoused, right? But again, left-wing Jews are not criticizing Ellison. They're criticizing the alt-right only. And you got a bunch of people in the media who are completely ignoring the fact that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and the entire left-wing of the Democratic Party are supporting for the head of the DNC a guy who's interested in doubling down on identity politics and who also has spent his entire adult life associating with the worst kinds of vile anti-Semitism you can imagine. And again, these people are all over Steve Bannon, which is okay, but they are completely leaving alone Keith Ellison. And I do want to point out here that there's a mistake that people on both sides seem to make, and that is they play the double standard game. They say, well, you know, they're focusing on Bannon, but they're not focusing on Ellison. Therefore, we shouldn't focus on Bannon. No, that's not the proper conclusion. The proper conclusion is you should focus on Bannon and you should focus on Ellison. By the way, Ellison is a significantly more dangerous character than Bannon is with regard to his views. Bannon is just a cynical opportunist who's willing to use the alt-right to get where he wants to go. Ellison is somebody who actually believes all these things, right? I mean, somebody who spent his time in the 90s calling himself Keith X. Ellison because he was an actual member of the Nation of Islam, and the media have nothing to say about it. The point of the double standard argument should be to restore the standard, not to tear it down. The point of saying, why aren't you covering X when you're covering Y, is not to say you shouldn't cover Y, it's saying you should cover all of it. But again, people tend not to buy into that because everybody's a partisan, unfortunately. Now, the Democrats are falling apart over this stuff because a lot of them are saying, like Congressman Tim Ryan from Ohio, why are we doubling down on the identity politics that just lost us this election? and are leading to ever-increasing numbers of white folks in the rural areas running away from the Democratic Party and running instead toward the Republicans. And then you've got people saying, we got to double down on the gal that brung us. We're building this new coalition. The demographics favor us. We got to double down on the identity politics. The Democrats are tearing themselves apart, and they're becoming, in the process, a regional party, a party that only exists in California and New York and some major cities around the country, but nowhere in the rural areas. The entire middle of the country is basically now red, with the exception of Illinois. I mean, that's an amazing thing. And look at the map. It's pretty incredible. But the Democrats do have one hope, and that hope is that Donald Trump is a complete crap show. That's their hope here. And Elijah Cummings basically says that. He says, you know, while he's trying to figure out what the strategy ought to be, he's saying, well, Trump's business is a minefield for conflicts.
The president can't have a conflict of interest. Is that problematic in your view?
It is problematic because clearly I don't think Mr. Trump realizes how significant the minefield is in this area. Keep in mind, Wolf, that during the campaign, he said one of his top priorities would be to bring honesty to government. He also talked about draining the swamp and used a lot of terms, basically saying that he was going to clean up government and he was going to make sure that there would be transparency. When you're dealing in so many businesses in so many countries, it's basically a minefield for conflicts. And to say that because you are the president, that the law does not apply to you, it's not so much just the law, it is the appearance of conflict.
Okay, so Cummings here is basically saying, we're banking on Trump to blow this thing. And if you're rooting for Trump to actually be a successful president, to do good things, particularly conservatives, if you're betting on him to do good things, you want him to stop doing the stuff where he's associating his business interests. The only hope for the Democrats is that Trump disgraces himself and then they come back. Because 2018, the map looks terrible for Democrats in the Senate. It looks awful for them. They have a bunch of vulnerable seats in red areas. They're going to lose a lot of senators. They're going to lose 6 to 8 senators in 2018. It's a disaster area for them. Unless Trump blows this. So you have to be rooting instead for Trump to actually get his act together. And that means holding him to the same standards which you'd hold Hillary Clinton. If you are able to portray, rightly, Hillary Clinton as a corruptocrat, you do not get to turn around and then proclaim that Trump is clean as the driven snow, pure as the driven snow, when he's intermingling his business assets and his presidency. And even the appearance of that is something that should be shunned. And there's an article today, we mentioned it a couple of days ago, there's talk that Trump had gotten on a call with the president of Argentina, and the president of Argentina had called to congratulate him, and Trump had brought up this permit for a Trump Tower in Argentina, and both sides denied it. Today, that permit went through. So if nothing was said, that's just a giant coincidence. This kind of stuff does not look good, and it's going to allow Democrats to drag Trump through the mud, rightly or wrongly, because where there is smoke, there usually is fire. Now, before we go any further, got a signal to our other advertisers, DSTLD, DSTLD.com, it's distilled.com. These folks make jeans, and the jeans are terrific. So instead of buying $200 jeans or $100 jeans, at Distilled, you can get these jeans for like $65 a pair, and they have many different types of jeans. The material is really friendly to your skin, I will say. They fit really well. And again, you can get two pairs of jeans for the same price that you'd get one someplace else. They're really terrific. They don't waste material. They are environmentally friendly for those who care about that sort of thing. It's DSTLD.com. And if you use /Ben, DSTLD.com/Ben, you get $10 off right now. They also have a new line of fall jackets as well that you can check out. They don't work with middlemen, which is why they can do this so cheaply. This is high-end denim. It's really good stuff. I own a pair, and I'm buying another pair. DSTLD.com/Ben for $10 off your first order. Okay, so now on to what Trump is actually doing. So he's made a bunch of cabinet picks in the last 24 hours. One of them makes, I think, a whole world of sense for him politically. It doesn't necessarily make sense in terms of the job, but it makes a lot of sense politically, and that is the choice of Nikki Haley for UN ambassador. So the governor of South Carolina, Trump has now picked her for UN ambassador, and she's going to accept. This makes sense for a number of reasons. First of all, does she have any foreign policy experience? Nah, not really. You know, at the UN, your entire job basically consists of just yelling at other useless people at the UN, so that doesn't necessarily require anybody with great foreign policy chops. As governor of South Carolina, she did stand strong with Israel against the boycott, divest, sanctions movement. That is worth noting. But the real reason that Trump appointed her is pretty obvious. One, it gets rid of a potential rival. If he does a bad job and someone's going to primary him, it could be somebody like Nikki Haley. Two, it gets rid of these charges of racism. People have been saying his cabinet is filled with white men. Nikki Haley is a woman of Indian descent, as Ann Coulter has made eminently clear. And Donald Trump is attempting to sort of get past the alt-right thing by appointing a woman of Indian descent. Third, it actually has the effect of elevating Trump allies. So even though Nikki Haley was not a strong Trump ally, she critiqued Trump a lot during the campaign, criticized him a lot. The person who is the lieutenant governor of South Carolina, who will now become the governor, is a guy named Henry McMaster. McMaster was a huge Trump supporter throughout the primaries, endorsed him as early as January, even before the first primaries were held in Iowa. Finally, it makes Trump look a little bit more broad-minded than he probably is, because it looks like he's bringing someone in who disagrees with him about foreign policy. Again, the reason I say that that's exaggerated is because UN ambassador doesn't really have much of a say. If he picks Mitt Romney for Secretary of State, then you start to change your calculus about the kind of administration he's going to run. Maybe he's going to bring in some people who disagree. So that's one of his cabinet picks. You want to hear me talk about the rest of his cabinet picks, however, you'll have to go over to dailywire.com right now and become a subscriber. $8 a month. We'll get you your subscription. You can become part of the mailbag today. We're going to do a live mailbag in just about 20 minutes here on Ben Shapiro Show. We usually do it on Thursdays. Tomorrow's Thanksgiving. If you're an annual subscriber, then you get a free copy of my novel signed by me, and you also get the ads removed and from the website and all the rest of it. You get Andrew Klavan's show as well. You get that live. You get to be part of his mailbag, and we're adding new goodies all the time. Go to dailywire.com right now to become a subscriber, and we are the largest conservative podcast in the nation. Okay, so some of the other Trump picks. As I said before, he's picked a woman named Betsy DeVos. Betsy DeVos is education secretary. So here's the good about her and here's the bad about her. So the bad about her is that she was a Common Core supporter. A lot of people make a huge deal out of Common Core because it was the federal government setting basic testing standards and other educational standards for the states. I don't like federal involvement in education, period. Common Core was a bad idea. But the reason that she's more important, Betsy DeVos, is because she is extraordinarily pro-vouchers. She's extraordinarily pro-charter schools. This is super important. This is super important, and it's really a great thing. I mean, I'm very pumped up about Betsy DeVos. I think that she will be a very good pick by President-elect Trump. That definitely goes down in the good Trump category. So on the good Trump category, you got Nikki Haley, and you got Betsy DeVos. Both of those are good picks. On the bad Trump category, you have Ben Carson. So here's Ben Carson, who's going apparently to be the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, explaining what happened.
So, Dr. Carson, now they're apparently interested in having you, if this is right, to be a HUD secretary. Would you be interested in that?
Well, you know, our inner cities are in terrible shape, and they definitely need some real attention. You know, there have been so many promises made over the last several decades, and nothing has been done. So it certainly is something that has been a long-term interest of mine. And I'll be thinking and praying about it seriously over the
Has holiday. It been offered, sir?
We have had offers, yes.
And is it the HUD position?
I would say that was one of the offers that's on the table.
I don't know what the offer is going to be, but I am excited that I can do a Ben Carson impersonation for the next 4 years while he's at Housing and Urban Development. The conversation probably went something like this. Dr. Carson, are you there, Dr. Carson? Yes, I'm here. Sorry, I fell asleep. Dr. Carson, I'd very much like for you to be the Housing and Urban Development Secretary. But Donald, I don't really know anything about housing or urban development. I really don't. I'm not sure why even you're calling me right now. It's like 4 a.m. Well, I was up anyway and I was tweeting. And I would love for you to be part of my cabinet. And I think that you were once living in a house in a city, were you not? Well, That is the case. That is true. But I think we all know the real reason you're appointing me. Well, I wasn't going to say it. Yeah, he's black. I mean, that's the real reason that he wants Carson in his cabinet, right? I mean, he was a big supporter, worst campaign surrogate of all time. Again, what Carson knows about housing and urban development is beyond anybody. I'm just excited that he gets to be here. I'm pumped. I mean, like, really. He's a terrible pick, and I'm very excited that I get to do an impersonation of Ben Carson for the next several years. It'll be very exciting for everyone, I think. So that's exciting. So that is a stupid pick. He's also talking The talk has centered on Mitt Romney for Secretary of State. I don't think this is going to happen. I think that this is just putting Romney up there so that Trump can smack him. That's typical Trump. I would be shocked and pleased if he offered it to Mitt Romney, not because I think it has to be Romney. I'd be equally pleased if he offered it to John Bolton. In many ways, more pleased if he offered it to John Bolton, and Bolton wasn't a clear opponent. But it would show that he is big-minded, that he's willing to get past some of the personal slights. He's willing to get past the fact that Romney was not a fan. And I think that would be smart. But that seems unlikely to happen, given where the rest of Trump's team is on this. A lot of Trump people are very upset with the idea of Mitt Romney. That includes Kellyanne Conway, who is out there in the media saying that Mitt Romney should not be the Secretary of State.
In terms of Governor Romney, I think the Secretary of State position is such that, and all the cabinet positions, you have to be qualified and capable, number one. Number two, you have to be loyal to what President-elect Trump has said his vision of the world and his agenda is for those first 100 days.
So if you call him a fraud and a huckster and whatever else, I mean, remember that speech he gave? It was horrible, just awful.
Well, and I just want to say generally, apart from Governor Romney, that there were a lot of never-Trumpers who were never-Trump up until the last moment. Go read their Twitter feeds. Go pull the tape of what they were saying on TV cameras and in print in different places. They didn't think he would win, and they wanted to pile on. Instead of helping the nominee of their party, they piled on. And in terms of a diverse cabinet, I'm all for diversity, but I think maybe one never-Trumper is enough, so let's not get 2, 3, 5 in there. That would be my polite suggestion. But at the same time, I think Donald Trump is somebody who commands loyalty and shows loyalty to those around him, but he's mostly loyal to the American people and the ideas that he ran on.
Well, my email is running
to fill that cabinet.
About 100-1 against, and people are mad about that he's even considering it, if he really is. I don't know if he really is.
So this conversation is a conversation for stupid people. And Sean Hannity saying, well, you know, he's only loyal to, he should be loyal. Listen. From my own personal perspective, as someone who doesn't believe that Donald Trump is going to be a very good president, that's my forecast. And again, for the 1,000,000th time, I hope that I'm dead wrong about that as I was about his electoral prospects. That being the case, there's a part of me that says I would love to see Donald Trump appoint somebody just like Donald Trump as Secretary of State, right? Make Bannon Secretary of State, and let's see how this game plays. Like, let's see what Trumpism actually looks like. The smart move for the country would be to appoint somebody who actually knows what he's doing. The fact that Kellyanne Conway, by the way, is sitting there talking about loyalty, this does make me laugh a little bit. Knowing that Kellyanne Conway is a paid gun for hire, and that's the only reason she ended up in the Trump campaign. Understand something, folks. Kellyanne Conway was the family spokesperson for the Mercer family. She was in the Cruz tank all the way up to the point where it became unpalatable for the Mercers to be with Cruz anymore. They switched over to Trump, and magically she becomes a Trump loyalist. So before you go into the whole, she just loves Donald Trump. Okay, she wasn't even for Trump during the primaries. Right? She's one of these people who flipped to Trump when it became convenient to do so, and then got paid for the privilege. So, you know, before granting this sort of patina of virtue to this, let's just point out that she went where the dollars were, and the dollars were with Trump. But, you know, all that aside, is it smart for Trump to reach beyond sort of the traditional boundaries of his loyalists? It would be smart of him to do so. There's a part of me that hopes he doesn't, because I would like to see what a cabinet staffed by the people that are loyal to Trump looks like. I want to see Trumpism in full action, and I think a lot of his supporters do too, for different reasons. But I think that would be interesting. For the country, I hope he picks the best person. For the country, I hope he picks the best person. I don't think he will. I think that he'll go with loyalty. I think it'll be Rudy Giuliani or somebody who has demonstrated more loyalty than Mitt Romney in any case. Mike Huckabee, too, was saying he's very, very, very angry at the prospect of Mitt Romney, who didn't like Donald Trump during the election, being the Secretary of State.
Well, look, it's not about that I don't care for Mitt personally, but I'm still very unhappy that Mitt did everything he could to derail Donald Trump. He didn't just go after him from a standpoint of saying, I disagree with his policy on immigration, I disagree with his policy on taxes. He attacked him on a personal level about his character, integrity, his honor. Well, when you do that, there's only one way that I think Mitt Romney could even be considered for a post like that, and that is that he goes to a microphone in the very public place and repudiates everything he said in that famous Salt Lake City speech and everything he said after that, where he said Donald Trump wasn't fit, that he lacked character. I mean, on and on.
Oh, it's a loyalty test. Okay, They want the loyalty test. Okay, well, if that's the way that it's going to be, then that's the way that it should be. And I'll be interested to see what he does. I think it'll say a lot about Trump as a man and as a president, what he does with the Secretary of State pick, if he goes with another loyalist to fill himself up with loyalists all around, or whether he brings in somebody who descends from the sort of pro-Russian tack that his administration has thus far taken. There's a story today that Donald Jr. Met with pro-Russian factions at a meeting in France over Syria. In any case, as all of this moves forward, it's posing some real challenges for some of the people who are big Trump fans going in. You know, people like me are not challenged, right? I can call it exactly how I see it. When Trump does something great, like appointing Betsy DeVos, I can say it's great. When he does something stupid, like appointing Ben Carson, I can say it's dumb. A lot of the Trump loyalists, however, are having a little bit of trouble here, and that's because Trump's a little bit all over the place. You're seeing Huckabee's angry, Conway's angry. By the way, the reason that Conway and Hannity and Huckabee are all angry, and the reason they go on TV to do this, is because, according to people very close to Trump, Trump doesn't listen to people who talk to him. He only listens to what he sees on TV. So people will literally go on TV inside his cabinet and say things knowing that Trump is probably watching, and then Trump pays more attention to them because it was on TV. Well, one of the areas where people are having a little bit of trouble is with regard to Trump's flip on not locking up Hillary Clinton. So this was the big promise during the campaign. Hillary Clinton was going to be prosecuted. Now, I at the time said that I thought this was unlikely, that I didn't think that Hillary Clinton would be prosecuted. I thought that if Trump won, the punishment was that Hillary would not get to be president of the United States. But Trump did make that promise, and he did say, I'm not a politician, I'm a businessman, and I never lie, and all the rest of it. And then he flipped on it. And so you can see the unease in Trump world over all of this. Here is Megyn Kelly pushing one of the reps for Trump on this particular issue.
Very different message from the one founded by yourself at Donald Trump campaign events, including this one on August 16th. Watch.
We have to elect Donald Trump to do that.
We have to elect Donald Trump to lock her up. And now it's like, for the good of the country, we have to move forward. I mean, you know, if you understand how people watch this and they're like, lying politicians who just say anything to get elected. They think we're chumps, that we're going to believe them then, and now we're supposed to believe them again now, even though the two messages appear to be diametrically opposed.
But, Megyn, you have to look and say the lock her up chant and Donald Trump were specifically talking about the email server and the emails themselves and secure information on a private server.
Right. And then he said lock her up, and then he didn't do it. So, yeah. Okay. And then Chris Matthews pushed Kellyanne Conway on this one, too. Chris Matthews, let me say, got up, but maybe show. Come in here, Kellyanne Conway. You look like you only slept for 3 weeks. I know what's going on with you. I know what's going on with me. I drank heavily last night, and then I got rolled in here, and everything was great. And here you are, and now my day's ruined. Chris Matthews, let me say, go.
Is there a belief that she's Crooked Hillary, or is that just something that's been dropped?
But Chris, look at the polling. NBC's polling and other people's polling. People, a majority of Americans still think that she has a veracity problem, a casual relationship with the truth.
Does she think that?
This is part of why... No. This is important. This is part of why she lost. And look, I'll say it again. Their unfavorability ratings were high for each of them, but for very different reasons. And for her, you had a much higher, more intense number of people saying, I just can't go there.
Right. How does he call up the dogs, Donald Trump?
He respects federalism and he respects the separation of powers. So he has stated what his position is as the president-elect and the leader of his party now, certainly.
I'm just saying, let's drop this like Jerry Ford did. Would that be out of the question just to say, that's part of my magnanimity of taking office. I'm just going to clear the air. There'll be no more prosecution because I'm pardoning her. End it right there. He could do that.
He hasn't said that.
And has he rolled it out?
That's not a conversation. It's not a conversation we've had one way or the other.
Okay, so in other words, Trump was just saying stuff, and he was using his influence to try and influence his AG pick, who will, I'm certain, follow Trump's advice on all of this. Peter Schweitzer, who wrote the book, literally, on Clinton corruption, and is a Trumpster. I mean, Peter Schweitzer is very heavily associated with Steve Bannon. They run something called the Government Accountability Institute together. Schweitzer writes for Breitbart. And even he was out there yesterday saying that Trump dumping this over, this is a rigged system.
If Hillary Clinton had won in November, I think it's safe to assume that she would not have been investigated for the Clinton Foundation. She has lost in November, and now it seems that Donald Trump does not want her to be investigated for the Clinton Foundation. That is the definition of a rigged system. Win or lose, she's not going to face any legal investigation.
Okay, and that's exactly honest by Peter Schweizer. You're going to be able to tell who's honest. This is a real litmus test, this period, because you're going to be able to tell who's honest and who's not by who calls out Trump for backing down off of promises and who doesn't. Now, there are certain people, like the folks at Breitbart, who are headlining Broken Promise. Okay, let me just point out something. The only reason that Breitbart puts that out is because Steve Bannon gives them permission to do so, knowing that the Breitbart people aren't going to care, right? The Breitbart readers aren't going to care. They're not going to rip into Trump. They're not going to care deeply. So they're establishing this patina of credibility, so when they go back to supporting Trump full scale, everybody will assume that they're more objective than they actually are. But there are people who are surrogates who during the campaign were saying lock her up and now are saying, oh, it's totally fine that he's not locking her up. Rudy Giuliani is one of those folks who's actually up for the AG position.
Then you can sort of put it behind you in order to unite the nation. So if you made that decision, I would be supportive of it. I'd also be supportive of continuing the investigation. I think the
convenient. I mean, it is convenient that you're supportive no matter what he does. Wow, that... It is, I mean, honestly, like one of the people who's been doing this today is Bill Mitchell, who spent months saying when he says he's going to lock her up, he's going to lock her up. And then today, he was never going to lock her up. He's going to let the process take place. About Mitt Romney. Well, I'd be disappointed if he appointed Romney, but I would still support him. Okay, if you can't name a single situation in which you wouldn't support him, you're a bootlicker, right? That's how this goes. That's how this goes. And this is a period when we're going to be able to separate who's honest from who's dishonest if this election hasn't done that already. Okay, so that said, you know, there are people who are still one of the things about Trumpism and one of the things about Trump is that Trump provides us the satisfaction of watching people get slammed. I have never been as happy as I was politically as watching Donald Trump sit across in the Oval Office from Barack Obama, because it was just justice in a nutshell. It was wonderful, because if it had been Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz, wouldn't have been justice. Watching Obama come to grips with the fact that he lost to Donald Trump, a guy he considers to be a clown and a charlatan, it was delicious. It was just wonderful. That said, the schadenfreude of watching Trump smack around people I think ought to be smacked around, that's not enough to blind me to the fact that he's still going to be the president of the United States and he still needs some standards. One of the things I find troubling is if you're rooting so hard for Trump and you're willing to give Trump so much credibility that you allow him to exceed the boundaries of the office when we still need people to watch him, that's a problem. One of the folks doing that, of course, is Sean Hannity. Here is Hannity talking about how he's just overjoyed that Donald Trump is going to restrict press access.
The media already had its chance to cover Donald Trump fairly and honestly. They blew it. And in my opinion, it's time to reevaluate the press in this country. And maybe it's time to change the traditional relationship that the press will have with the White House. Now, in this day and age of Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, does Trump really need to be granting access to biased journalists that openly oppose him? Just look at the video the president-elect released yesterday. It was detailing actions that he will take on key issues during his first 100 days in office. Now, Trump can do this and speak directly to you, the American people, without having his words twisted and taken out of context. Why not do that? So until members of the media come clean about colluding with the Clinton campaign and admit that they knowingly broke every ethical standard that they're supposed to stand and uphold, they should not have the privilege. They should not have the responsibility of covering the president on behalf of you, the American people.
So only Sean should have the responsibility of covering the guy who he was secretly backing in the primaries while lying to everybody that he was being completely objective about covering all the various candidates. Yeah, only Sean should have the ability to do that. Again, I despise the media as much or more than Sean does. I don't hobnob with them. I don't even know most of the members of the media on the left. But I think that, and I certainly don't make Sean's kind of money, but I think that it is fascinating to watch as people just take principles that they would have hated during the Obama years, right? Like now he's praising Trump for going directly to the people. Obama used to do this routinely. He used to cut the press out of the loop, use Twitter, use Facebook, put out his own videos. He actually had his own kind of White House press corps where he would put out videos of himself and pictures of himself taken only by people who surrounded him so that they all looked really good and shiny and glossy. And I remember Sean not being particularly happy with that. But now that it's Trump, everything switches magically. And that's just the way that all of this works. If everything switched magically because it's Trump for you, then you need to take a look at your intellectual honesty. Again, this is going to be a running theme. And this is not just me ripping on Trump. Because, again, I'm happy to praise him when he does things right. Nikki Haley, smart. And Betsy DeVos, terrific pick for Secretary of Education. Right? When he does good things, we'll praise him. I opened the show by praising him for taking a different stance on police than Obama, which I think is deeply necessary and wonderful. Okay, but that also means when he does stuff wrong, you got to criticize the guy. And it may not be what you want to hear. But again, if you want to hear rah-rah boosterism, there are plenty of places to go for that. Okay, time for some things I like, things I hate, and then we'll do some mailbag. So, things I like. So we're doing now. I feel like I did an adventure book the other day, The Day of the Jackal. So now it's time for another adventure book. This one is John Krakauer's Into Thin Air. This is a phenomenal book. John Krakauer is a lefty, but that doesn't really come into play here. The book is about the climbing of Everest and this giant disaster that happened where a bunch of people were killed because of a giant storm and people got caught up there. It is riveting. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal book, Into Thin Air. Don't bother seeing the film Everest. It's not nearly as good. If you want to see a film that is about the same thing, go see the IMAX film. IMAX made a film on Everest that is really first rate also because there was an IMAX crew up there at the time of all of this, and they covered some of the same ground. The footage there is incredible. But Into Thin Air by John Krakauer, really, really good book. Don't bother with his other ones. Some of his other books kind of stink. But Into Thin Air is really top-notch. Okay, other things that I like. So tomorrow is Thanksgiving, so I've brought for your viewing pleasure an old video that I cut about the origins of Thanksgiving. There's one mistake in it. When I mentioned Puritans, it should be Pilgrims. Puritans were a subset of Pilgrims, but not all Pilgrims were Puritans. Otherwise, everything in this video is factually correct, and it gives you some information that's kind of neat about what actually Thanksgiving was about.
Hi, I'm Ben Shapiro, and this is Reality Check. Thanksgiving is almost upon us, and once again, we'll be treated to the usual dumbed-down version of the Thanksgiving story. White Europeans landed in America fleeing religious persecution, were too dumb to farm, and relied on the wise Native Americans to help them. Then they had a meal together and learned to share, after which the white Europeans genocided the Native Americans. Let's watch some football. The whole story is much more interesting. It's also not particularly friendly to leftists. The Puritans who came to Massachusetts on the Mayflower were not emissaries of religious tolerance. They actually left liberal Holland to push for, quote, the glory of God and advancement of the Christian faith, as it says right in the Mayflower Compact. Turns out, Christianity was much more important than multiculturalism to the heroes of Plymouth Rock. And Christianity, not multiculturalism, saved the Puritans. The first winter, half the new settlers died. That was because of drought and plague and failure to understand the crops. Then, Squanto showed up. Now, Squanto wasn't just a Native American refugee from the Disney movie Pocahontas jabbering about the colors of the wind. He was a Christian. Apparently, Squanto was just a boy when he met the English for the first time. He was promptly captured and sent back to England for training as a guide. In 1614, he came back to America with John Smith, and then he was kidnapped again by one of Smith's men, sent back to Spain and sold into slavery. Spanish monks bought him, taught him Christianity. He somehow ended up in England, earned the respect of an Englishman who paid for his passage back to the New World. In 1619, Squanto finally went home. But by the time he got back, his entire village had been killed by disease. 1 year later, the Pilgrims showed up and happened to settle right there in Squanto's devastated village. Governor William Bradford wrote that Squanto, quote, became a special instrument sent of God for our good. He never left us till he died. It was Christian Squanto, not Native Americans generally, who taught the Pilgrims how to farm. With Squanto's help, the Pilgrims survived to celebrate the first Thanksgiving in 1621. When he died 1 year later, he asked Bradford to pray for him so that he could, quote, go to the Englishman's God in heaven. But that wasn't the end of the story either. The Pilgrims had set up a massive obstacle for themselves. Their idea of a religious utopia was a giant commune. And, like all communist experiments, it failed spectacularly. Governor William Bradford wrote, quote, the failure of that experiment of communal service, which was tried for several years and by good and honest men, proves the emptiness of the theory of Plato and other ancients, applauded by some of later times, that the taking away of private property and the possession of it in community by a commonwealth would make a state happy and flourishing, as if they were wiser than God. Community of property was found to breed much confusion and discontent and retard much employment, which would have been to the general benefit. In other words, both men and women refused to work and stealing became rampant. So, what did the Puritans do? Bradford described it in 1623, after the first Thanksgiving, they trashed the system. Quote, the governor, with the advice of the chief among them, allowed each man to plant corn for his own household, so every family was assigned a parcel of land. This was very successful. So successful that more than a century and a half later, George Washington explained the legacy of religious purity in his first Thanksgiving Day proclamation. Quote, it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey his will, to be grateful for his benefits, and humbly to implore his protection and favor. And it is with thanks to God and his principles and the pursuit of his purity that we celebrate this Thanksgiving. Now let's go watch some football.
There you have it. There's the entire story of Thanksgiving. Once again, I'm right. Good job, Ben. So there it is. Okay, time for some things that I hate. Let's do it. So we begin with the latest in the foibles of Rick Perry. Rick Perry had been discussed as a possible Secretary of Veterans Affairs under Donald Trump. That's still possible. But it appears that he wants to be Secretary of Rap because he was on Dancing with the Stars last night. Vanilla Ice was Dancing with the Stars. And Rick Perry made an appearance. And this was the most successful governor in Texas history, by the way, right here, that we're looking at. And yeah.
Yo, VIP, let's kick it. Oh, yeah. All right, stop, collaborate, and listen. Ice is back with a brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly. Flow like a harpoon daily and nightly. Will it ever stop? Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights, huh, and I'll glow.
To the extreme,
I rock a mic like a vandal. Light up a stage and wax a chump like a candle. Dance, where's the speaker that booms? Killing your brain like a poisonous mushroom.
Yeah, who's the guy, who's the DJ in the background there?
Anything less than the best is a felony. Love it or leave it, you better gain weight. Better hit the fools out of kids, don't play.
Governor Rick Perry,
yo, I'll solve
the
it.
DJ.
Check out the book for my DJ revolt.
I hate our country so much because of stuff like this. I mean, really, like the fact that you wonder why politics and celebrity merch, this is why politics and celebrity merch. People were saying, why would he do this to himself? Well, because he wants to be president still, clearly, right? I mean, if you want to be president, apparently you need to go to the Grove, which is a wonderful place here in L.A. You need to go to the Grove and you need a DJ for Dancing with the Stars, Vanilla Ice. If Perry had wanted to be more successful in his run against Donald Trump, clearly what he needed was more reality TV exposure. I understand he's raising money for the military. That's all wonderful. It just saddens me that political figures have to stoop to DJing for the lip-syncing guy from 1993 in order to gain credibility. Okay, other things that I hate. So this happened yesterday. CNN anchor was interviewing some people about Trump and the alt-right, and a lefty person was talking, and you'll see what happened.
And then, you know, if you don't want to support the alt-right, don't choose as a White House counselor. Counselor, a man who uses the word, whose wife says that he did not want his daughters to go to a school with too many Jews. And don't choose as an attorney general a man who calls the NAACP an un-American organization and who we learned in The Guardian today went so far as to prosecute
Charles,
two of the
just
people.
Hang on a second. I appreciate you going through all of this, but please don't use the N-word on my show.
I'm sorry. Well, I never use the N-word except when I'm quoting someone who's been appointed by the president to serve in the Oval Office, since this is such a disgusting moment in our history.
Okay, so two things are wrong with this. One, there is no evidence that Bannon has ever said the N-word. That's misattribution. But there is something else the media do that's really irritating here. I don't say the N-word because I think the N-word is vile. But there have been a number of situations in which people say, you know what's really bad, the N-word. And then they say what the actual word is. And people go, how dare you say the N-word? It's like, well, wait a second. The person was trying to rip the N-word. Okay, the language policing that exists that's so strong that if you say anybody who says the word bleep is vile and you actually say the word, and then somebody says, how dare you say the word? Well, that sort of defeats the purpose, right? I mean, the whole point of saying the word there is to say how vile the use of the word is, and that is to me silly. I remember that Dr. Laura got in this sort of trouble a while back because she was saying it's disgusting when people use the N-word, and she actually said, when people say this word, it should be disgusting to you. And people said, how dare she say the word? And it's like, well, but she was saying it was disgusting. That's sort of the point, I think. But again, if you're that is a level of sensitivity that I think is one bridge too far. Again, I think the word is taboo. I think it ought to be taboo. I think it's gross. I think it's disgusting. But if somebody is saying the word in order to illustrate that you shouldn't say the word, that's not the same thing as just saying the word because you're calling a black person that word. That's silly. Okay, time for a few entries from the mailbag. Okay. Jacob writes, hey Ben, love the show. I was reading the article of your site about the Daily Wire being blacklisted and was wondering what your stance was on how do we combat censorship like this in 2016. Also, do you think this hysteria will die down or will it continue to grow since the mainstream media continues to add fuel to the flames? Okay, I always bet in favor of hysteria growing, and thus far I have not bet wrong. So I think it will continue to get worse. As far as fighting back against the censorship, don't use services that censor and don't allow yourself to be co-opted by services that censor unless you're willing to deal with the censorship. Now, a lot of these are private companies trying to blacklist us. That's their prerogative. But if you want to strike back, then the easiest way to do that is by using your market power or by using the power of your voice to tell them that you don't think that's appropriate. Grant writes, for most young adults like myself, leftism is everywhere. High school through college, is there something about leftism that gives attraction to younger people? Yes, it's the feeling of unearned moral superiority. You don't actually have to do anything. Just by virtue of declaring yourself a leftist, you have now gained moral credibility in the eyes of society because you are somebody who believes in fairness and somebody who appears to be giving. And sure, you're giving other people's money. Sure, you're not giving charity. But because you say that everybody should be equal, how can anyone argue with that? You must be a better person. Conservatism can only be made sexier, as Grant asks, if you're willing to talk the language of morality, right? If you say, yes, I'm conservative, and that is a morally superior position because it says you don't get to steal from me, and I don't get to steal from you, and nobody gets to steal from each other just because they think they ought to rule the world. And that's a morally superior position. That's the position we ought to be taking. Tanner says, Republicans take credit for being the party that gave us the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. Democrats say there was a switch between the two platforms and claim credit. What actually happened? There was no switch between the two platforms. On a proportionate level, more Republicans voted for the Civil Rights Act of 1964 than Democrats did. The idea that there was some sort of Southern switch, Dinesh D'Souza does a good job in his new movie about Hillary of debunking this. There's a reason why Republican governors now being elected in the South are the first Republican governors in many cases ever elected in some of these Southern states. Democrats continue to vote Democrat. Republicans continue to vote Republican. And very few of the Democrats who were supposedly the Southern racists who wanted to be Republicans switched over to being Republicans. The only one anyone can name is Strom Thurmond, and he denounced his own racism. So, you know, it's hard to come. Robert Byrd didn't switch parties after you know, coming out as a member of the KKK. So that's just not, it's not factually true. If that had happened, what you would have expected is not just a shift in the electoral map. There are a lot of reasons for the shift in the electoral map, up to and including law and order issues, economics, war issues, social issues being pushed by the left. But the idea that basically the South was pro-slavery and therefore it went Republican, not true. During the entire Jim Crow period, it was Democrats pushing it. And in the post-Jim Crow period, people didn't start voting Republican because they thought that Republicans were in favor of Jim Crow, because Republicans weren't in favor of Jim Crow. Okay, Alexander writes, as a veteran and a new college student, I've been called a baby killer and a warmonger in a couple of my classes. What is your suggested response to avoid adverse effects on my academic standing? So my rule here is speak up when you can, shut up when you can't. So don't try to get the best of your professor by writing a conservative answer on a test where you know you'll get an F. Instead, babble like Bernie Sanders, get the A, and then use the degree against them. Works like magic. Okay, Richard says, how can I, Joe Schmo, help keep Trump's feet to the fire on conservative issues? Love your show. First of all, I think that, you know, when you speak out, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook, when you share information with your friends, when you organize protests, when you write letters, all of this does have an impact. It does have an impact. And I think that when we hold Trump's feet to the fire, it really should be unified when we're holding Trump's feet to the fire. And I'm sort of amazed that it isn't. I'm sort of amazed. I was talking to a friend today, a close friend, who is you know, very pro-Trump now. And he was saying that he's okay with Trump's business ties. And I said to him, wait a second, why? Like, you wouldn't have been okay if it was Hillary. And he tried to make a false distinction. I think that that's silly. I think it's foolish. And I think that it demonstrates a lack of principle. Zach writes, hi, Ben, I'm in no way hoping Trump fails. But if he does, do you see an alliance forming between conservatives, libertarians, and classical liberals? Yeah, that's possible. That's possible. I hope that Trump becomes a conservative, a libertarian, or a classical liberal. I'd rather that and see him succeed than continue down the path of ad hoc Trumpish policy to failure. And again, it's not a matter of me wishing him to fail or wishing him to succeed. I hope he embraces policies that cause the country to succeed and therefore for him to succeed. I don't care about his personal political success. I don't care about anybody's personal political success. I care about the policies they pursue, and those policies can either be right or wrong. Nathan says, you often say there's little or no institutionalized racism in your campus tour speech, but in the same speech you discuss how Asians are marginalized via SAT scores. Could affirmative action be considered institutionalized racism? Is white nationalism a reaction to this? Okay, so first of all, affirmative action is institutionalized racism. The policy is racist. It judges people on the basis of race. That is definitionally racism. As far as white nationalism being a reaction to the identity politics of the left, I think there's truth to this. I think that a lot of people have seen the identity politics of the left, and their reaction is not racism is bad, the left's racism is bad, all racism is bad. There's some people who say, well, racism is okay for them. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. So if they can be racist, we can be racist too. I think that's disgusting. Richard says, Gabriel says, Ben, what is your opinion on fish tanks? Have you ever had one? Or do you think they are a waste of time and money? I've never had a fish tank. I think that tropical fish are quite beautiful. I'm also wondering if you're a serial killer from that question. John writes, what issue do you feel is the most effective starting place for helping brainwashed young leftists see the immorality of the left? The easiest place to start when you're talking about young leftists and the immorality of the left is issues. Well, I mean, honestly, I think all of the issues at work, but I think that issues of economic freedom are actually a good place to start. I think leftists like to think that they're being fair in when they redistribute things. When you say to them, it is immoral for you and your friends to vote my money to you just because you're poorer, that's you being selfish and greedy. I think that resonates with a lot of people, including some people on the left who'd never thought about it that way before. Thomas writes, hello, Ben. I have a wide and potentially hazardous variety of potential wives. Okay. As I only get to select one, and not being Donald Trump rich, I'd rather have the one be the only one. What is the criteria for a future wife? Could you provide some traits to look for and some deal breakers? Okay, so here is the basic rule. The basic rule is that you should pick somebody, you should date people who have the same values that you do. That means discussing serious issues on dates, not just movies that you like or sports teams that you enjoy, but actual serious issues. How do you want to raise your kids? What do you want to see the world be like? What do you think is good and bad? How do you want to raise those children? What do you want America to look like? What do you think are good principles to follow on a personal level? That's the way you're going to find somebody compatible. You know, values compatibility cannot be taught, or it can, but it's much more difficult. If you use that, I think that if you're restricting your subset of people you can date, but values compatibility is the strongest recipe for a great marriage. There are a lot of people who fall in love and they have no values compatibility and things fall apart. There are a lot of people with values compatibility who may not even have been in love when they got married and who end up with long-lasting, vibrant relationships. That was true for most of human history, and that can be true for you. All righty, so that brings us to the end of the week. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving. I hope you have a happy one. If anybody in your family decides to bug you about politics and you don't want to talk, feel free to tell them to screw. And otherwise, really just have a good time. Enjoy your turkey. Enjoy the limited amount of football that's on TV. And we'll see you back here next week.